Well, hi, everybody. This is Mark Chaffardini. Thanks for coming back to the Go See Talk podcast experience. Man, oh, man, oh, man. Have you got great news for us or have we got great news for you? We're going to speak to Mr. Kurt Wimmer. It's been a long time since we've been wanting to speak to him. Equilibrium is one of our favorite movies. Children of the Corn makes us very wary of children. But Mr. Wimmer, how's things in your world?
Things are fine. That sounds like a loaded question. What do you mean exactly?
Just a general grapefruit. Let's start this off very casually, cordially, confidently. No,
it's gone very busy. I'm writing. I'm doing a bunch of things. And the moment I'm in the middle of a credit arbitration simultaneously releasing this movie. So it's good to be busy, but it's sort of a lot of pressure.
One thing I love about watching your career is that there's a lot of remakes, and you put a lot of reverence and you take a lot of respect to the Total Recall, Children of the Corn, and you put your own spin on it. What's your favorite part of the whole process, really?
I enjoy it all, every bit of it. It's the same, it's a different version of the same process. They're very different. Obviously jobs, there can't be two more different jobs than writing and directing, but they're really fulfilling, both of them. I really enjoy both of them. You know, one of them is, you know, the loneliness of the long distance runner. And then the other one is a million people asking you, you know, for your opinion all the time, all day long, and then going home and rewriting. And of course the post-process is also rewarding as well.
Well, I speak to a lot of composers and they talk about being in silos and being all by yourself. So I imagine that writers find themselves in the same basket, like you mentioned. But when it does come to all those different opinions and ideas, I guess, who do you look for to find the most confidence in, or most, who do you work closest enough to try to make sure that the visual direction is as seamless, or as there's enough continuity from the written direction?
Let me see if I could interpret that question. You know, I work very closely with my producer, in this case, Lucas Foster, in the general story sense. But, you know, visually, I have a DP, obviously, director of photography, who, you know, lights it. But, you know, visually, I interpret it the way I see it when I write it.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah,
I see it the way I write it. There's no reason for me to change it when I hit the set. The only exception to that, of course, is there are environmental barriers that have to be dealt with. And sometimes they're economic and sometimes they're practical, where you can't always get what you originally wrote. So you have to modify it based on, you know, your locations or the money you have or how long you have to shoot.
Okay. Well, I'd like to speak specifically about the very first scene in Equilibrium. Christian Bale bursts through the door, shotguns below the hinges. He kind of surfs in on the door. I guess, how do you, when you had that in your mind and you were trying to bring that to real life, that's kind of a question I was wondering. Like, who do you lean on to really get as close as?
Me.
Okay.
No, I mean, it's exactly the way I intended it to be. I mean, there isn't anybody else. I mean, I had a very talented DP, Dion Beebe, in that. And that's why it's so beautifully lit, the movie. But, you know, the framing of the framing and composition is all part of, you know, the storytelling. And it's exactly as I shoot it as exactly as I see it when I write it.
Do you also imagine the storyboard process? Because I've spoken to a couple people who say that they find storyboards limiting. It doesn't give them enough opportunity on the day, which I guess if you're working on a time and a budget thing, you probably want to know what you're going to do before you get there. But
absolutely, you have to know exactly what you're going to do. I don't believe in storyboards personally. Some people like them, and that's fine. I actually do something different, which is I do a topographical shot list. I will draw the progress of the camera through the set, you know, throughout the setups, you know, camera one, position A, B, C, D, look from an overhead, from looking at it overhead of the set. So that way the people, you know, my DP can understand, and other people, pieces of key crew can understand how the camera is supposed to travel and how the camera interacts with the actors. and how many setups we have and what direction we're looking, which is also always very important. You know, are we going to look in this direction? No. Well, then we could put, you know, crew over here. We can stuff them over here. So, you know, which direction is the lighting going to go? And I try and be very, you know, very conscious of that, because that's the only way, you know, particularly when you're dealing with budgets that are limited, to get through the day.
Well, something like Total Recall had a lot of special effects. Children of the Corn was very practical for much of the runtime. How do you dance between those in terms of the production, the setup, and executing a shot where you would either have to lean on heavy effects or just have kids running through the corn?
Well, you know, I'm not an expert in visual effects, so I really, it's a matter of faith, because you don't know what you're going to wind up with. You have to, you know, pray to God that your VFX supervisor knows what they're doing when they say, okay, we're going to hold this ball up here. And you tell the actors, okay, that's a monster. You better believe it, even though it looks like a styrofoam ball that's been painted black and has a stick stuck in it. So I don't enjoy that part of the process at all, because, you know, again, you never know what's going to happen with it. It's like, is this really going to work? I mean, it doesn't look like it's going to work. And they're like, yeah, maybe it's going to work. And you're like, thanks, that makes me feel better.
Well, speaking specifically to Children of the Corn, this is the first time we really get to see
Walks. He Who Walks.
But now when you put a face to that nebulous entity, what was that like?
Well, yeah, He Who Walks, or the long version, He Who Walks Behind the Rose. You know, it was a long process, a lot of discussions between me and my producer, Lucas Foster, and Digital Domain. And, you know, a lot of conversation about, you know, what does something, I mean, first of all, there was a lot of conversation about what is the monster? Who is He Who Walks Behind the Corn? I mean, is he even real? Which is a significant question in the movie, or is he a hallucination? Because you remember the heroine, Bolin, is hallucinating at the beginning of the movie because of the fungus, the ergot, that grows in the dying corn, et cetera. So that's part of the question too. And so, or is it a manifestation of the kid's id, you know, the traumatized manifestation of their id? So all these things play into, well, how do you design this? And it is something of a corn that comes out of the corn. And then, you know, you say, well, it's got a mouth. You're like, well, if it has a mouth, why does it have a mouth? I mean, does it eat things? You know, all of these questions went into building it. And, you know, I'm not sure that we were sort of really entirely got there about what something that, you know, comes from either is an hallucination, or emerges out of the id of damaged children, or is a reaction to the roundup and of the chemicals that were put into the corn in order to increase its corn syrup yield, and an allergic reaction by nature, in other words. So there was like a lot of logical conversations, and then like, okay, but you know, can we make it something that's entertaining too on it? So it was complex, and it was a long process.
Well, I do like the idea that the possibility of a shared hallucination, you know, what one person's idea could feed the other. And before you know it, you have this group mentality that believes in one thing, which may not be anything. I love that concept. But, you know, when you're dealing with children, I understand that sometimes you don't want to let them know everything that's happening in the story, especially if the rating is above their age range. How do you include them in the story to let them know the important beats, but not scare the crap out of them about what's going
to
happen?
Well, that was not a question. I mean, they all got to, you know, read the script. You're allowed to, if you're going to be a movie, you're allowed to read the script. So there were no secrets. I mean, you can't hide it from them, and nor should you. But also, the movie, there's nothing in it that's, you know, particularly bad, I don't think. You know, there's no nudity and there's no swearing in the movie if you look at it. So it's very, you know, aside from, you know, a couple of things, some violent things, it's rather kid friendly, I think. And, you know, the things that are violent, they happen all to adults. So kids are all for that.
They're getting their chance and they get paid to do the violence. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I was really surprised to see Bruce Spence. Loved his work in the Max series, and he had a little bit in The Matrix. What made you want to grab him and put him on the big screen?
Well, he's one of the best actors in Australia. It's that simple. You know, he's, you know, he is a pro, and he's there, he comes to play, and he's great. He's just great. I mean, he's Bruce Spence, you know, he's sort of pitch perfect every time, you know, and he's not afraid to sort of go big, which is something you need in a movie like this.
Well, what is the most difficult thing about shooting stunts practically? Is it safety? Is it the like blood splatter? What is the one thing that you're like, when we're doing stunts, we've really got to nail X?
It has to look good. You know, okay. I mean, we didn't truthfully have a lot of stunts in this movie. You know, we had some, but you know, it's got to look good. It's what the camera sees. It's not what's going on around the camera. It's what ends up in that frame.
Yeah, I always remember that last scene in where Taye Diggs gets a tiny bit of his face sliced off, and it's just sort of, you know, and things like that were of the time. Digital effects were of the time. That's the things people were doing. How were you able to use current digital effects to create the creature or the blood and the gore? And I guess what was your input for the gore factor?
Well, in some cases we had to enhance it because you know, it can be, blood can be extremely time consuming on set, and we were working with a very limited schedule. So, you know, you have this dilemma where, you know, you want to put real blood on them, and we did, you know, certainly there's Eden, Kate Moyer is wearing a lot of real blood, but if there is a voyage that the blood takes in terms of starting with some and going to more, it becomes very, very tricky in terms of continuity. So you know, sometimes it was easier to do it after in post, or if not to do it, then to enhance it, which is sometimes what we did.
But the, you know, one thing that was interesting about the story is that you can't always get everyone's stories. And one of the little plot threads that I was very interested that was taking was Callan Mulvey's character. He was having a little bit of a marital trouble, and you know, it was something that he decided to just not talk to his daughter about and not even acknowledge really. But before you got to figure out what's happening, those characters were out of the story. Were there little, not to say red herrings, but were there little things that you were trying to maybe elaborate that didn't get into the story, which would have maybe
No. You know, Calvin Mulvey, he was a good guy, but his wife was cheating on him. I mean, everybody in the town is corrupt. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Everybody except maybe him. And that's fundamentally the basis of that, and the fact that corruptness led to the destruction of the corn, which has fed that community for, you know, over a century, and now it's gone. And so he was just a victim of that. And of course, he's an alcoholic by the time we meet him. And he was just there to shine a light on the fact that the protagonist herself, Boleyn, she was suffering from, you know, this sort of moral breakdown that the entire town had been suffering.
Kurt Wimmer, thank you so much for being on the show. And to take us out, can you tell us maybe something that's on the horizon for you?
Well, I've got The Beekeeper coming out, you know, at some point this year, which is David Ayer directed, Jason Statham. We're excited about that to see how it is. And I'm writing a script live online. You can watch it if you want.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I'd love to get some information about that and post it.
Cult Kino House on YouTube. You can just go visit Cult Kino House on YouTube, and I post the work every day. So, you know, I do a cut down version of, you know, maybe 10 minutes, and with some elaboration on why I'm doing what I'm doing and why I make these decisions I make, both commercial and creative. And then there's the raw data for anybody who's a masochist enough to want to follow along.
Well, I have a desire to write a screenplay, so I think I will be following you very slowly, very soon. Thank you very much, Mr. Wimmer.
It was great to talk to you.
Bye now. Thanks.